Hour 3 Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 on the TSN app, your home smart speaker, and up on TSN 2. And 1050's Free Agent Frenzy coverage is presented in part by your Ontario Subaru dealers. Brian Hayes in studio for the hour. Noodles is out of here. Kristen Shilton is in studio. Good to see you, Kristen.
Yes, good to see you, Brian. It's yeah. Like I'm always hearing you, and I see you on TV,
I know.
But now I get to see you in person.
Yeah, we saw each other this morning pulling into the parking lot, I guess, at the same time. I'm like, I can't remember the last time I saw you in person. Like, you've been on the show. I see you on SportsCenter all the time, TSN.ca. You've been doing a lot of work like everyone else, but it's all remote.
I know.
What's it like being in the building?
First thing I thought when I saw you, I was like, that's Brian, right? Is his hair longer?
I can't even
remember. It's been a year and a half. I think this is only the third time that I've been back here since March 2020.
Yeah.
So today was like the first day of school. Like it was
it's
great
awesome, isn't it? Like it's good to see people. It feels like we're kind of getting back to normal, which I think is a good thing for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And it's great to have you in here. So there's a lot going on, obviously. And you've been doing the top 10 boards throughout the day.
Mm-hmm.
Did you have Leafs on that? Like, I heard you so many different times in different variations.
Mm-hmm.
But of the Leafs pickups, I'm assuming Peter Mrazek was not in the top 10.
Well, no, none of them were in the top 10. I had a couple. I had Mrazek, and I actually had Michael Bunting high. He was.
Yes.
I told Jim Taddy on Leafs Lunch, I think last week, that he was a guy that I had my eye on for the Leafs, not just because of the Sioux connection, but there's just. And Kyle Dubas said it today. There's just something about him that reminds me of Hyman, in that he's a guy that maybe you undervalue at first, and then he finds his way a little later, like a late bloomer into a specific role. So I did have those guys there, but nobody in the top 10 that the Leafs were targeting. But I was.
But you
not
like
surprised.
Bunting, though. Like that's an interesting thought. Like we were talking about that earlier today, and we had Kyle on. Dubas was on about an hour and a half ago. And listen, he cannot give a complete answer on how they're going to fill the role of Hyman.
Mm-hmm.
Because Hyman's a unique player. He's a veteran player. He's been so successful for them. Whatever answer he's going to give you, and he gave us one, is probably not going to fulfill the wishes of Leaf fans today. And a guy like Michael Bunting is not someone that the average Leaf fan would be that familiar with. The average hockey fan is not a household name. The idea that Mikheyev maybe grows more as a player, Pierre Engvall grows more as a player, until you see it, it's difficult to reach that point. But that's ultimately what they're hoping for, right? Like, they're going to throw a lot of guys at the wall and hope at least one sticks and can play up the lineup. Because they need at least one guy, if not two.
Yeah, that's been the consistent message from Dubas, is just we're counting on the players we have to get better. And that's not just about your Engvalls and your Mikheyevs. That's counting on your core to get better, too. That's counting on Auston Matthews and Mitch Marner and William Nylander to keep taking steps and continue to be better, especially when it counts the most.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what's so important, is that it to me, and I said this on Twitter, it feels to me like a message and just saying, we're going to try to fill in the gaps here, but Hyman's gone and it's your team. And this core has got to really take the reins on that. So we're past the father figure stage. We're past the, you know, veterans coming in to support you. You've got to support one another now. And that's what I felt like the moves today indicated.
Yeah. And that's, I think, 100% appropriate. It has to be. Like, at what you can't keep holding their hand.
No.
Like Matthews, Marner, Nylander, those three in particular have been given the world. You know, they've been paid. I'm not sure they love the last coach. I think they like the current one. They've had really quality wingers. They're playing together now in terms of Marner and Matthews. Nylander playing consistently with Tavares. They have all the opportunity in the world to be the presence they're supposed to be. The thing is, I don't expect growth to show up in terms of the regular season, because we've seen that.
Yeah.
Like, how can Matthews be better than it was a year ago? Like, maybe he wins the Hart and is definitively the best player in the league, but I'm not expecting him to grow that much more in terms of the regular season. So we're really talking about the moment in time come the playoffs, and that's got to be unsettling. Like, I asked Dubas about that earlier. I'm like, it's got to be a little bit unsettling knowing you're not going to have those answers until playoff time.
Yeah, you're just going
to
white-knuckle it for 82 games and just hope. I mean, even if Auston Matthews won the Hart, even if Mitch Marner won the Selke, even if they won every award going, the regular season awards, and it's the same thing with Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl in Edmonton, it's great that you win regular season awards. It hasn't helped them when it matters the most. So how do you change that mentality? How do you approach those demons? And the last time that Dubas was on with you guys, he said, you know, you have to confront them head on, and you just have to acknowledge it. And this is a way of acknowledging it, is just saying, you know, you're the guys that have to get us over the hump. So this is your runway to do it. And also, a year from now, we're going to be talking about potentially Morgan Riley being a free agent. And what does that look like? And is he number one on the trade bait board? On the list next year? Like, this is a big season for a lot of reasons, but the biggest one just being that there's no white horse. There's no one coming to save you.
Right.
The guys who are going to save this team, they're already here.
Well, even when you look at what they did last year, like bringing Thornton in, was considered this big boost for the room.
Yeah.
And he's not coming back. You know, Bogosian is a guy that they brought in a similar status. He signed with Tampa today. He is not coming back. Simmons is back, but the initial push that he brought is not going to be there because he's already, you know, assimilated into the room. So I just don't know where it's going to come from outside of, you know, what you've been saying and what Dubas is saying and what they're committed to is the core four. And even I think the defensemen have to play a part in that as well. Like the four guys they protected, they have faith in them, and they're all veteran guys.
Right.
Like even Hall is not your conventional vet, but he's 29 years old. Muzzin's been around the block. Brody's been around the block. Morgan Riley's been around the block. Now you got Mrazek and Campbell. That's your core. The four guys up front, the top four defense, the two goaltenders, that's the team.
Yep.
That's what it is. Everything else is edge work that has to play an important role and has to produce, but they're coming back with that group, and that's what's got a role for them.
Yeah, and Dubas saying, if Kerfoot's going to the wing, does that mean that Engvall's your third-line center?
Could
Adam
be.
Brooks is your fourth-line center? Like, where does this Kropf guy fit in? Is he your fourth-line center? There's some questions about your bottom six, but in terms of your top six, I mean, you kind of have what you have, and unless there's a trade, and to be fair, there's still time. There's still time before camp where some changes could be made. Where does Nick Robertson fit into all this? There's definitely changes that can still be coming, but I wouldn't expect, unless something really special materializes, that we're going to see a major change from what they have now. There might be bottom six additions. But I was curious on the back end, though. I mean, Justin Hall, first of all, his $2 million hit, you understand why they protected it now when you see what the Cody Ceci's of the world are getting on the open market. Defensemen are expensive, and the Leafs are going to need to potentially add there too, but it's going to be those bottom
edge work
guys.
Yeah. And I think at some point, kids have to be expected to play somewhat of a role as well. Mm-hmm. Rasmus Sandin, Dermott is not a kid anymore, but they've still got him. Right, like Seattle did not claim him. He may get dealt between now and the beginning of the season. I don't get that impression, but anything is possible. You're dealing with a team that is fairly consistent with what they ran out last year in terms of the big boys. I had this conversation earlier. It's more anecdotal in nature. I mean, just talking with Leaf fans, living among Leaf fans, that it's a darker period of time among the fan base. And you cover this team as closely as anyone. But you talk to Leaf fans all the time, and you're around Leaf fans all the time. Do you sense that there's more cynicism today than there has been in a long time?
Yeah, I tweeted out a list of all the players that the Leafs acquired today, and the reaction was just like, nope.
It's like overwhelmingly
negative.
This
ain't it. Like, who are these guys? And I don't blame them. I don't blame you for looking at that list and thinking, okay, yeah, the goaltending position, you could say that they've at least upgraded over 2020-21 Frederik Andersen because he didn't play very well. And I think Peter Mrazek is going to fit in, and he's just a low-key kind of guy, and I think he'll work well. But it's not a whole lot else there. Josh Hosang, maybe, but
that's a reclamation project that you can't have that much faith in.
How often does a PTO hit, right? And hit in a big way. So I get it. I understand the frustration. I understand the doom and gloom of it all, but also we're not to September yet. So maybe save a little bit of that until, and even on the panels today, we had our guys saying, you know, the Leafs are going to be the team that take a step back. Maybe that helps them to have the pressure off. Like, no one's really expecting as much from you now, so there's just a little bit more freedom. Maybe perhaps they can turn it into a good thing, but it's going to be a bit of a mental hurdle, I think, for the Leafs to capture what they had in the regular season last year, as good as they were, and not have the whole year be overshadowed by the playoffs and what's to come.
Well, but that's the whole thing, right? Like, if they are built differently and built a little bit weaker than they were a year ago, and they're certainly going to be in a stronger division, you know, like the North was not as bad as a lot of people were claiming it was. There's bad teams in every division, But the Leafs ran away with that. They were comfortable all year. It never looked like it was going to be coming, come in question as to who was going to win that division. Now they go back in with the best team in the league in Tampa, who they're not as good as and won't be at any point unless they catch a miracle in terms of a seven-game series. Like, maybe you can beat them in a seven-game series, but between now and the end of the next season, I don't see the Leafs being higher than them in the power rankings. Boston, Florida, I think, has improved. Montreal, I think, has taken a step back, but you know, you're in a tough race. So you can't look past the regular season in terms of hoping to get to the playoffs to prove yourself. But I am curious to get a read on what the tone is going to be in the city. And I guess within the room, hopefully you can get back in there by September and October and actually like find out what's going on and get a taste of things. But I'm with you. I think it's going to be an interesting case study in terms of how fans feel, how the team feels. Because I don't think the team is that... They can't be proud of themselves right now. Like, even Dubas, who's generally... Kyle's a really easy guy to like, easy guy to interact with. He's been on the show countless times before, albeit in better situations where he'll have fun with us. And I kind of knew this afternoon. I'm like, he's not going to be in the mood to be, you know, chuckling about
his
things.
Last couple appearances have been a little heavy.
It's like all business. Yeah, it's a little bit heavier.
Didn't want to talk about his golf game with Gord last time.
Not interested in that. Like, he's in a different spot. He's not in the mood. And I can't blame him because he's taken a lot of daggers. You know, Dubas is taking heat. Shanahan's taking heat. All the players are taking heat. Mitch Marner's in a spot he has never been in before in this city.
Yep.
Like, there are a lot of people that I don't think have turned on him completely, but are very unhappy with the last year and a half.
Well, and then today, you know, Zach Hyman's penning this beautiful letter to Toronto and just being, you know, and they feel like now the heart and soul of the team is gone.
Unanimously loved in the city.
And that was your heartbeat. And now you've got these guys here that everyone's questioning their commitment. And do they really want to win here? And is it all just about you're a star and you got paid and now you don't care? And the narrative around this team is dark to me right now, just because there's nothing I think that fans feel like they can really hold on to as a positive.
Yeah.
The talent is there, but it's not showing up. And now the players that they loved, Frederik Andersen being one, maybe not so much this year, but in the past, and now Zach Hyman, they're walking away. And you're maybe getting better in some ways in terms of your growth as a group, but I mean, Jason Spezza is going to have his work cut out for him.
He's 38 years old, too.
Being that guy who's got to just keep the character high in this group until the core takes it over. And maybe they'll surprise us, and they will do what Dubas is asking and really take control. But I don't know if that changes on a dime. I don't know if how quickly that happens.
And I don't think we won't know until they get to the playoffs, ultimately. You know, like, really, the platform is going to have to be the playoffs.
Yeah.
For them to prove any substantial change in terms of their attitude, in terms of the intangibles, in terms of what they've learned.
Yeah.
Because they've been through it the regular season. We've been through it for 5 years. They go to the playoffs every year, which we can't take for granted considering the previous, like, decade where it didn't happen a lot and it certainly wasn't consistent. But, it is. They are in a very different spot. Where I think internally the expectations have to still be through the roof. You can't allow them to take a step back. You can't allow the team to think that you're taking a step back. But I think externally, people are looking at them differently, for sure.
Well, and today you lost Zach Hyman. You didn't re-sign Nick Foligno. You didn't re-sign Zach Bogosian. You see these guys walk away. Are you a better team today than you were?
I don't think they are on paper,
day?
No.
No.
Now, the Mrazek deal, I appreciate because I think it was imperative they got one of these guys. You know, I never thought they were going to get Grubauer. That was too rich for them. I didn't think they were going to acquire Marc-Andre Fleury, and the Leafs might have been on his no-trade list anyway, so maybe that was not even an option for them. Darcy Kuemper, I don't think they could have got into that because they've been giving up too many picks and prospects to begin with.
Yep.
At some point, you can't continue to just throw everything against the wall. So the Mrazek signing makes sense to me. 3 years at 3.8. Is it a little bit rich? Yes. But you look at some of the other guys that have signed. I had it here just momentarily. You have Andersen at 4.5, who I think healthy Freddie Andersen is better than a healthy Peter Mrazek.
That's a lot, yeah.
But 4.5 coming off the season Freddie just had.
And he's 31.
Brossoit got 2.3. James Reimer got 2.25. Like, Mrazek is better than those guys. And so I think it was imperative the Leafs got a guy that they could pair up with Campbell. So from that standpoint, even though everyone else on the list that they signed, not going to come with a ton of adulation and excitement. I think the Mrazek signing was legit, and I think it had to happen, and I'm fine with that.
Yeah, the first text that I got about Mrazek after it happened was just from someone who's worked with him for a long time and just said, great team guy, mm-hmm. low maintenance, high energy. And that's what you need, right?
Yeah.
Just not going to, like, ready to push with Jack Campbell, ready to be a starter if he needs to be, ready to support if he has to be, and can really excel in both roles. He can be low-key, but in, you know, the right moments, he's going to also really have that energy, and that's maybe what the Leafs need, because Frederik Andersen was just very, you know, you didn't really see the highs and lows as much with him. Maybe a little more energy, a little more Jack Campbell-ish. Maybe that'll be good for this duo.
Where do you stand on Campbell and his ability to replicate what he did last year? Like, over the course of 50 starts. Is that reasonable to even expect?
I wonder sometimes if the reason that it worked the way it did is because he didn't know it was coming. Is that it just sort of fell into his lap the way that it was, and he didn't really have any choice but to go with it. Whereas this year he's going to go in with the pressure of, you have to, A, replicate what you did, and now you have Peter Mrazek right with you who's going to be pushing you, but you're expected to still be the guy.
That's such a good point. You like, Freddie was the guy.
Yeah.
At the start of the year, he was the guy. Jack Campbell was a defined backup.
Absolutely.
And it just fell into his lap in large part because Freddie got injured the way he did, although Campbell dealt with injury problems last year at the beginning of the season.
But first game.
Absolutely. Yeah. And then got healthy, got the ball rolling, started establishing records. I thought he performed well in the playoffs.
Yeah.
Like, he was not an issue for me in the playoffs. But that, I think that's a very intriguing point, that now he's starting opening night. Like, I would assume he's going to be the guy. I think they believe he can bring it to an extent, maybe not the exact same way he did last year. But that is a different mindset. Now you got a full offseason where it's like, all right, let's see if you're the guy. Like, this is your opportunity.
And then it's almost like Dubas, from what he was saying today, are you guarding against the idea that if Jack Campbell comes out and has another big year, are you still going to be able to afford him?
Right.
When he needs a new contract?
He's an RFA, though, I believe, right? Next year?
Oh, yeah, exactly.
But still, you're paying him a lot of money.
You're paying him a lot of money. And then now at least you have Mrazek there as well. And so you can work something out, perhaps, if you can't keep him. So there is that idea of just making sure that when he needs a new contract, that you know what wheelhouse you're talking about. Are you talking about a starter, or are you talking about a backup? And the only way to know that is to push him this year and see if it's a, was it a flash in the pan, or was it something he can do consistently?
Well, and that's the thing about the money always coming up, and it smacks you in the face even more as a team when you have no playoff success. Like, they never win in the playoffs, so immediately carry it over. What are you gonna do with Morgan Riley? What are you going to do with Jack Campbell? And what has been proven with this team is they pay based on regular season success. You know, like,
that's all
Matthews,
they have to go on.
That's all they have to go on. Matthews, Marner, and Nylander got their deals simply because of what they did during the regular season.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the hope and projection that they would show up come playoff time, and they've been shortchanged in that area multiple times, at different times from every single player. But that's the position they find themselves in. All year it's going to be, okay, what do you do with Riley? And if Campbell stands on his head, what are you going to pay Jack Campbell?
Yeah.
Like, that's probably going to be a big part of the storyline throughout the regular season.
And I thought when Dubas said on his last appearance just about, they never thought they'd be here. They did not expect that this would be the scenario that they were in. And you can appreciate that. I think you can appreciate that it was obviously not the plan to be in a flat cap world in a global pandemic. But as well, you're still making the choice to not trade anyone. You're making the choice to keep the core, and that's completely your prerogative. It's four really talented players, but at the same time, there is a price to pay for that, and that's in the fact that you don't have a whole lot of capital to put anywhere else. And I think if you had to pick an area, goaltending was what you needed. It's where you should have spent the money, because you've spent the money already on your offense. Your defense could use a little help, but you also got TJ Brody last year, and you're paying him $5 million a year, so You kind of shored up that last year.
Yeah.
You gave Jake Muzzin his extension. You protected Justin Hall. So in a way, Dubas has done what he could with very limited resources. But at the same time, he's in that position
he's
because
made that
of
call.
His own
It's his philosophy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, he has the ability to change it if he wants to. And as of today, he has chosen not to.
He's riding with what he's done. And
And I guess it's always subject to change. Like, maybe something crazy happens between now and the beginning of next season. But if we're reading the tea leaves based on everything Dubas and Shanahan have said, they're bringing the band back, right? They're going to roll it out. It'll be different parts, you know, around the edges, but for the most part, they're going back to war with these guys, and I expect the regular season to work out fine for them. I don't think it's going to be as easy. I think there'll be bumps in the road. I think they're a playoff team, but I have no idea what to expect once they get there. And nothing they've done today would suggest they're in a way better spot to succeed come playoff time.
No.
That's another thing about this offseason is it's going to be on the shoulders of Matthews, Marner, Tavares, Nylander, the top four, and whoever's in net.
And that's,
you know, that's what it's going
to
be.
And that it has to be.
Yeah.
Because there's no way around it. But bumps, I don't think, would be the worst thing for this group. That's the one thing. And then the other part is that, hey, you know, if it doesn't go, that adversity may, you know, just push them where they need to go a little bit more mentally as they get closer to the postseason. Because it wasn't an easy ride, but what, they lose like 13 games in regulation?
Yeah, they barely lost.
You go in and think, well, this is it's Montreal.
And then they're up 3-1.
And then you're up 3-1, and then it all falls apart. So maybe a little adversity, taking some of the pressure off, all the high expectations, maybe it's not the worst thing.
Yep, we will cross that bridge when we get to it come September and October. But it was great seeing you, Kristen.
Yes.
Great seeing you all
great
day. Great work
you.
On Trade Center or Free Agent Frenzy, whatever the hell we call it today.
What day is it? What month is it?
I think it's Free Agent Frenzy. It's July
28th. It's July 28th.
Let's hope we never do this again. July 1st is what hopefully will be a part of the plan in the future. Great to see you. Thank you for coming in studio. As always.
Thank you for having me.
She is Kristen Shilton and our Maple Leaf reporter. You can follow her on Twitter, Instagram, everything. She's got everything covered in terms of the Leafs. And I guess you're going to be off for a while or?
Who knows?
We'll see what happens.
I'll be back in. I'll be back here in next week. Okay. So we'll. I don't think you'll be here, but
no,
I'll be
I'm
here
going
with
next
Jim Taddy. So,
yeah, there you go.
Yeah, there we
All
go.
Right, perfect.
So you'll hear me if you're listening.
You will hear Kristen many times throughout the summer. There is Kristen Shilton. Darren Dreger, our hockey insider, will join us. I got to get into the Aaron Rodgers presser earlier today. The Jays are back in action tonight. They won the afternoon game of the doubleheader, Robbie Ray pitching a gem. The Jays won 4-1, so they're off the mat after losing a couple of games in a row. And the Raptors will be on the clock with the fourth pick as of tomorrow night. We'll get into what Bobby Webster had to say earlier today, specifically about Masai Ujiri. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on TSN 2. Lots of activity today. Lots of money spent. A lot of player movement. The Leafs were active. All the Canadian teams were active. And Dougie Hamilton signing the biggest deal of the day. He gets 7 years at $9 million per. He's going to New Jersey. The Devils have not been a very good team for a while. And that's a big commitment. They still got P.K. Subban for one more year at 9.5. We wonder what's going to happen with P.K. in the future. But we'll catch up with Dregs, get his take on that, among some other moves around the league. Nick Foligno going to Boston. Zach Hyman going to Edmonton. Peter Mrazek here in Toronto. Freddie Anderson down to Carolina. But the Raptors are going to take over, I think, the city sports scene, you know, over the next 48 hours or so with the draft tomorrow night. They pick fourth. And Bobby Webster was speaking with the media earlier today. And Masai is still lurking. And what's going to happen with Masai Ujiri? And I am getting more and more optimistic that they're working out the fine print. They're working out the details here. The NBA finals are over. You're into the deep stuff in terms of the offseason. This is where Masai really has to do his best work and has historically. The most important time of the year for the president of basketball operations and the GM. And if you were planning on leaving, I'm not sure how active you would be. I'm not sure you would still be around. You know, if you're Maple Leaf Sports and Entertainment and you've got a big 2 or 3 weeks ahead of you in terms of what you do at the draft, what you do with free agency, what's going to happen with Kyle Lowry, if Masai's not going to be a part of the program, I would think at some point you're going to say, this has got to come to an end here. And Bobby Webster saying what he said earlier today and basically breaking down Masai's daily routine is giving me more and more confidence that he's sticking around and he's going to remain the architect of this team. It's a matter of term. It's a matter of maybe the details in the contract. But here's what Bobby Webster had to say earlier today about Masai Ujiri.
I don't know. I had dinner with him last night. I had breakfast with him this morning. He's upstairs making phone calls, so I think he's busy.
Bobby Webster is in a position where I'm sure he wants him to stick around. You know, I'm sure he wants to continue to work with Masai. And, you know, he's not generally a guy who gives up a ton of information. Not that that was necessarily groundbreaking, but he could have easily just said, listen, I'm not involved in that. I don't know what's happening with Masai. We love Masai, blah, blah, blah. He basically said this guy's working as if he's still fully employed and remains and plans on remaining fully employed in the future. So I think the next 2 weeks or so, it's there's going to be some watershed moments here for the Raptors. I hope they keep the pick. I hope they stay in the top four. You know, if they move up, that's fine. I don't know what that price would look like. You know, if Evan Mobley drops and that's the guy you want, go get him. Jalen Green's on the board. And you feel like you got to go up and get him. Get him. If you're going to stay at four and Suggs is there, take him. I hope they stay at four and draft for the future, which is what Webster said he will do today. But the plan with Lowry moving forward, the Siakam rumors that are out there, there's a lot of potential activity here. And if it is consistent with Masai Ujiri signing a deal to stick around as the president of the team, I think it's going to go a long way for Raptor fans. I think there's going to be some positive vibes here. And I expect they'll be back in town by the end of September and early October. And I think they'll be down at Scotiabank. I think there'll be fans in the stands. And hopefully COVID, in terms of the Raptors, will be behind them. Same thing with the Jays. They're here Friday night. You know, we're only a couple of days away from the Jays being home. And Jays winning earlier this afternoon. Their doubleheader is kicking off just after 7 o'clock tonight. Get to that a little bit later in the hour. But here's our TSN hockey insider, Darren Dreger. Dregs, you've been here at the compound all day. I haven't seen you, though. Where were you?
We were at Gino's House of Pain, Gino Retta, on the Daps hockey side of things.
And, okay.
I guess, Brian, that's just, you know, more of the ongoing restrictions of COVID-19, right? They've got to use the full facility, the compound at TSN/CTV. And so the insiders with Gord Miller and Lindsay Hamilton were on that side on the Dots Hockey and the Jay Onright set.
So, I like it.
Yeah.
I like it. Yeah, it's been active, man. I mean, we bank on this every year, right? But it seems like a lot of money was flowing around for a flat cap, a lot of trades, a lot of activity. Was this what you were bracing yourself for, or did this exceed your expectations?
No, it definitely exceeded my expectations, but I did forewarn some of the producers and the brass at TSN a couple of days ago, just saying that, look, when noon hits and the frenzy begins, it's actually going to be a frenzy. I predicted that it would be like flowing from a tap. And that first hour, it really was. And if you're the National Hockey League, I mean, look, from my perspective, I'm glad that we had all of that activity. Because, and look, from a viewer standpoint, I think that they probably enjoyed the coverage that much more, right? Did you guys talking about all sorts of different compelling storylines and, you know, your main analysts, you know, talking about actual hockey things that had just happened as opposed to speculating or dealing on other stories around the National Hockey League that maybe aren't as relevant to what the day can be. So, you know, it was a great day, but it was also pretty obvious that some of the players, the agents, and the clubs went into this day knowing that they were very likely going to get the player that they identified, and they were ready to roll at noon Eastern. So it was busier in terms of how the day just continued to develop. When you've got a big fish, Brian, like Dougie Hamilton, hanging out there until late in the day, late in our coverage, then that in and of itself can be enough to keep you on the hook, right? Because you're wondering, well, what's going on? Why isn't this deal done? So there were lots of compelling storylines, and that was a big one.
Well, Dougie Hamilton ends up going to New Jersey, which you guys have been reporting for a while that was likely going to be the case, but we were just waiting for it to actually be confirmed and for him to sign the deal. So he gets $9 million per for 7 years. And Noodles and I were talking about this earlier. What does that mean for P.K. Subban, who's got 1 year left at 9.5? Like, what is going to happen down in Jersey? This is a big commitment. They haven't been a very good team, but clearly they're prepared to take a step. Is this going to be enough for a team like Jersey, who, again, have been largely irrelevant in terms of the standings the last couple of years?
Well, look, I mean, if you want to start with P.K. Subban, you know, there was some trade speculation, inside a week ago. And I checked with the New Jersey Devils, and, you know, Todd Fitzgerald at that point just honestly said, look, I haven't had a single call with the general manager about P.K. Nobody's called, and I'm not calling anybody. So I don't know if that means that there's a commitment to the remainder of his time in New Jersey, or you know, it's definitely something that they're going to revisit moving forward. What I know is, you know, Dougie Hamilton chose the New Jersey Devils because of the fit and the opportunity and how he thinks that it's going to work out well in the future. Now, you know, how many teams around the National Hockey League were positioning to give him $9 million per? Not many. But there was definitely a market. There were other teams that were in it. And I could tell you that if the Chicago Blackhawks hadn't landed Seth Jones via trade, that they would have been hard after Dougie Hamilton. He might have gotten more. He might have ended up with a Seth Jones contract at $9.5 million. And sometimes that's all it takes. And, you know, what kind of muddied things up a little bit, I think, was the Carolina Hurricanes' interest up until even late last night. I don't think that Carolina had the stomach, the wherewithal, the interest in getting into the sweepstakes and going up to the AAV that Hamilton, you know, agreed to on $9 million and a $63 million package. But I think that they thought wrongly that the market was going to tumble, that it was going to collapse at the feet of Dougie Hamilton, and there they'd be with a lowball offer ready to scoop him up. And that didn't happen. But out of respect and fairness to the Carolina Hurricanes, you know, that eighth year was in play until a certain point yesterday. They felt like they needed to stay in it. So sometimes that kind of stuff can also gum things up.
With Darren Dreger, a TSN Hockey Insider, I think maybe the biggest surprise of the day for me was Philip Grubauer going to Seattle, where I just always assumed he'd re-sign in Colorado. Colorado would value him and understand the importance of having a number one goalie. This guy had a great year, spectacular year. So it's on two fronts. Seattle, after taking all those goalies, including Chris Drieger, who they've signed already to an extension, now they give Grubauer 6 years at 5.9. That's a lot of commitment in your goaltending position. But what does Colorado do now? They don't have a starting goalie. Yeah. Where are they going to go here?
Floundering a little bit, to be sure. I mean, you know, as we were closing in on, it's probably that 5-6 o'clock hour tonight, you know, more started to percolate around Darcy Kemper. And is it Colorado? Is it another team that's expressing interest? There are lots of teams that would have interest. Where Arizona is at, I guess that's ultimately going to be up to Bill Armstrong to figure out. But you got to look at Buffalo. You got to look at Colorado. Brian, I'm not convinced that the Edmonton Oilers feel like, you know, they're rock solid set in goal, even though they signed Mike Smith to the 2 year.
No.
But to your point, you know, it's one thing to talk about Buffalo. You're talking about Colorado. You're talking about top contending Stanley Cup favored team. And there's not a lot out there. There's not a lot available beyond Darcy Kemper. So shrewd work, I think, by Ron Francis and the Seattle Kraken by stockpiling positional players. You know, teams are going to need a third goaltender or even a backup goaltender, or who knows, an injury means you need a starting goaltender, and they've got options in Seattle. So Ron Francis could be very popular here in the near future.
With Darren Dreger at TSN Hockey Insider, you mentioned the Oilers and their goaltending situation. Putting that aside, where they, as of now, they got Koskinen coming back, Smith re-signed. I'm with you, though. I'd still be looking to upgrade there. And I get the impression, based on the actions of Holland over the last week and a half, like they have put all of their chips into the middle here. We knew the cap space was going to be available, and they're spending it. They just signed Derek Ryan. They obviously gave a massive contract to Hyman. They've read up Nugent Hopkins at a big term. They bring in Duncan Keith. They re-signed Tyson Berry. They signed Cody Ceci to a long-term deal or a multi-year deal. There's a lot of turnover here, a lot of moves. I think they're better on paper, but how much better are they expected to be in Edmonton?
Yeah, well, I mean, the expectation is that they need to be a lot better.
Yeah.
You know, and that's pretty obvious with the investment that they made in certain contracts. You know, there's no guarantee when you sign these guys that they're going to slide in and be a perfect fit. I mean, look, I don't have to convince you on the type of player that Zach Hyman is. Mm-hmm. We know what he did for the Toronto Maple Leafs, but are we certain he's going to be able to deliver the way he did shift after shift in Toronto with Edmonton? There's no guarantee in any of that, but the expectation is strong. Lots of question marks on the back end. I'm more optimistic of how I think they're going to be a hell of a team to watch. And some days that's going to be for all the wrong reasons because they're going to struggle to keep the puck out of their net. But it's going to be offense first, isn't it? It just has to be. I mean, when you look at that blue line, you know, beyond Darnell Nurse, like Cody Ceci is going to have to be one of their defensive-minded defensemen.
Yikes.
And I think to some degree he can be underrated in that category. I know that Edmonton thinks much higher of Cody Ceci than the Toronto fan base probably does, or the Ottawa fan base probably does. But I think that the Edmonton Oilers are much better. If they had found a way to keep Adam Larson, then I think that they would have been even better still. But they weren't able to do that. So Adam Larson goes out. They make the Ethan Bear trade, and that allows them to do what they did in signing a top point producer in Tyson Barry, and then taking a bit of a risk, a bit of a flyer on Cody Ceci on defense.
With Darren Dreger, TSN Hockey Insider, the Montreal Canadiens 2 weeks ago were in a very different position than the one they find themselves in now. You know, they're battling it out with Tampa in a cup final. And now you fast forward a few weeks, Shea Weber likely won't play next year. Carey Price is having surgeries. Philip Deneau has left the team. It was a very expensive contract, but clearly the Kings think he has a lot of value. And based on what we saw in the playoffs, I can understand that. So yeah. Dano's going. We know what just happened at the draft. And now, you know, Jeff Molson issues a statement at 12:30 today, right when the free agent frenzy starts. Definitely not a coincidence. They're getting hit from sponsors. Their fans aren't happy. How do they get out of this? Like, what does Montreal do simply from a PR standpoint, moving forward to kind of get some of the positive will back in their favor?
It's going to be tough, isn't it? And that's really tough in general because of how great a year, how great a postseason it was for the Montreal Canadiens to march all the way to the Stanley Cup final. I mean, there was just an open acceptance that they lost to a much better team in the Tampa Bay Lightning. And I mean, that's obvious. So you're right. I mean, you know, the Logan-Mailloux draft, that was a blunder. That was a flat out blunder by the Montreal Canadiens. And I'm not so sure that Jeff Molson would have come out, issued the statement, address the media in the fashion that he did, if not for the threat and the heat that the Montreal Canadiens are feeling from their sponsors. Media is one thing, fan base is another, but when people are threatening to pull out and remove their support because of one pick, well, then it becomes a serious matter. And I Mark Bergevin and the Montreal Canadiens aren't making that selection in the draft without Jeff Molson and ownership knowing. I mean, they're not that tone deaf. So, yeah, I hope for everyone's sake that this story at some point finds a way to disappear, but I don't think that that's going to happen anytime soon. I really don't. So the season probably can't start fast enough for Mark Bergevin so that, you know, most of us start focusing on hockey instead right. of all the other stories in Montreal.
Well, I'll get you out of here with what I think will likely be the topic of discussion throughout the rest of the offseason, and that is Jack Eichel. We're waiting to see what's going to happen. We know he's available. Buffalo's talking to people. We know Eichel wants out. So where does it go from here, Dregs? You know, what are we hearing, and is there a chance he's still in Buffalo come day one of the season?
Yeah, I mean, as unlikely as that seems, there has to be a chance, Brian. Otherwise, Kevin Adams and the Buffalo Sabres are going to settle on a deal that is way inferior to what would be acceptable. Now, you're going to lose that trade because when healthy, Jack Eichel is a superstar. And top-line centers of that caliber are never available via trade. They're just not. You have to draft and develop them. So then I think you have to look around the NHL and look at the teams that we know had the Minnesota Wild had interest. Could they rekindle that interest? Yeah, maybe. You know, well, we'll have to wait and see. I mean, Billy Guerin isn't afraid to be creative. The New York Rangers have been willing to listen. I don't think that they've been willing to give up the ransom that the Sabres have requested from a futures perspective, what they'd have to deliver on. But then you look at some of the other teams that have been rumored to be, you know, prime contenders for Jack Eichel. Vegas isn't doing it. Kelly McCrimmon, he made his moves. They like their team. They filled their holes. And the Los Angeles You know, Rob Blake filled his need. He's coming up, so this could be a trying offseason for Jack Eichel and the Buffalo Sabres.
Well, we'll see where it goes. You're officially into the offseason. Enjoy it, buddy. We'll do it again soon. Thank you for this.
All right, man, let's play golf. You live in my neck of the woods. We should be able to arrange it. And I know that you play one of the finest golf courses in the province.
That's right, buddy. We'll connect. Let's make it work very soon. Very soon. Thank you, Dregs.
All right, Brian. Thank
there
you.
He is, Darren Dreger, a TSN Hockey Insider. Yeah, tee times, high priority for the insiders, the analysts. Duthie, I'm sure he's already on the road. He might be doing SportsCenter hits, so he might be sticking around, but I wouldn't be shocked if he tries to slide in 9 tonight. And he will be on tour the rest of the summer. Bobby Mack, Pierre LeBrun, Darren Dreger. It's July 28th, and we're just wrapping up the hockey season. And in some ways, just getting started with the new one, I guess. You know, that's really what we're doing here is we've opened the door to the new season. And there's a lot of activity in the NHL. We're expecting that in the NBA. The NBA is now going to take over with the draft tomorrow night and free agency right around the corner. Big names. We know there's guys on the table, like potentially in terms of trade. If Dame wants out, if Beal wants out, if the Raptors put a guy like Siakam on the table, if Golden State puts a big package on the table, the NBA never disappoints. So you know what they're going to bring. And then you got the Jays coming home on Friday night. And the Jays winning this afternoon, Robbie Ray pitching well, and they took game one of the doubleheader. And we'll tee that up a little bit. And I've got to touch on Aaron Rodgers and his comments today and whether or not it means anything for his future in Green Bay. That more coming up. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on TSN 2. Alex, brother, you're a big football fan. It's football season now. The camps are open, right? Like, I think as of today, it's football season.
Well, more so because free agency's over, and now I can put all my energy into football.
Right.
I'm ready to go now. Last couple weeks, heavy hockey.
Mm-hmm.
Now we got football back. Your boy Rodgers back-ish.
That's right. He's back, man. He's playing this year. Like, that's not up for debate. He's playing this year. He knows it. I don't know what he's accomplished through this, but he was very open today. Like, I was over in the other studio waiting to come up, doing different, like, free agency stuff. I'm like, I want to be listening to Rodgers here. Like, what's this guy on about? Twitter blew up.
Yeah.
One quote in particular sticks out. This is what he had to say about his role in what Green Bay represents and how he believes he should factor into the way that they operate.
I think we can all understand, you know, Green Bay isn't a huge vacation destination. People are coming here to play with me, to play with our team, and knowing that they can win a championship here. And the fact that I haven't been used in those discussions was one I wanted to change moving forward. And I felt like based on my years, the way I can still play, that should be a natural part of the conversation.
So he's right about Green Bay. I mean, it's not Southern California. It's not Vegas. But he wants power. He wants say, and that has not been the way that they've operated. And I'm not sure they're going to change now. They're throwing him a bone, picking up Randall Cobb. But Cobb's done, man. He was done by the end in Green Bay. This is the problem with my issue with what Rodgers is saying. He's like, I wanted to say in what we might do with certain players and who could stick around. You can't evaluate based on that because those are your buddies.
Yeah, I don't think that he should have the power. I think he's being a big prima donna, and it imagine what happens if this team gets off to a slow start. Like,
he is going to take some heat in that market, man.
A beating, an absolute beating.
Yeah. After this, you're right. He better step up big. And he's coming off maybe the best season of his career. Close to it. Can he replicate that? I doubt it. He's got to get close enough. They've got to win. They got to win that division.
Highest expectations, I think, that there's ever been for Rodgers and Green Bay going into this year.
Right. And I'm not sure anything he said today opens up the door for anything but an exit still. Like, I kind of feel like he's made up his mind.
Yeah, he's gone.
But it's an existential moment for the Packers, you know, in their front office, because he said they never called him about Matt LaFleur, which I do think is stupid. He's your star quarterback. Give him a heads up. They didn't end up doing that. But in terms of him making personnel decisions, I don't think it's going to start now. So I don't think it changes. Good seeing you, Al's brother.
Yeah, it's good to see you too, live in person.
Live in person. I look forward to the Olympics, the Overdrive Olympics into the fall. Continue to be inspired by the current Olympics. It's been great to be in studio, JP, seeing everyone around here. We're out of here. I'll be back at home tomorrow at 4 p.m.
You'll chat then.